Swanee by George Gershwin and Irving Caesar from way back in 1919. Gershwin was just 21, but sung, as I doubt you've heard it sung before, by none other than Aretha Franklin, recorded when she was just about 23 years old in 1966. Yes, it's part two, and the concluding part of our sampling of Black Sabbath, an amazing CD put together by a group who call themselves the Idelson Society for Musical Preservation, a group of self-described record-collecting dumpster divers who have brought together here under one roof the secret musical history of Black Jewish relations. We like to think of it as, for the most part, Black performing artists performing Yiddish and other Jewish songs. I'm Andrew Patner. The program is Critical Thinking. We had so much response to our first airing of Black Sabbath that we aired it again, and now we're going to round it out with the rest of this set and then a few other pieces of material. We thank right at the start Steve Robinson, general manager of WFMT, who brought this recording to us from San Francisco earlier this year. We are sharing with you my own comments and notes and those that come in a book with the CD by Josh Kuhn, K-U-N, teaches at the Annenberg School of Communications at the University of Southern California. Swanee, Mr. Kuhn writes, will probably always be remembered as a blackface song, if not the blackface song, eternally synonymous with urban New York Jews turning fantasies of the Black South into American pop hits from under the smoky, alchemical veil of burnt cork. The song here became a signature number, the signature number of Al Jolson, who sang it in his Winter Garden show Sinbad, recorded it for Columbia, spent 9 weeks at number one, sold over 2 million copies, and then performed it in no fewer than 3 separate Hollywood musicals. Irving Caesar once said, "Some people think George and I were Southerners because we wrote Swanee, but it's just a case of imagination. We never saw the Swanee River. We had never been south of 14th Street when we wrote Swanee." I doubt that, since George Gershwin lived on the Lower East Side. But after the song became a hit, we took a trip down south and took a look at the Swanee River. Very romantic, muddy little river. Very nice. Nothing against it, but it's a good thing we wrote the song first and used our imagination. Aretha Franklin was born into the South that Caesar and Gershwin imagined. And on her 1966 album for that same record label, she turns the song Inside Out. On the same album, she takes a look at Old Man River of Kern and Hammerstein, but with the Swanee, she doesn't so much interpret the song as take it over and make it wholly her own. I thought, of course, of another great interpreter of that song, Judy Garland, and her famous Carnegie Hall performance of 1961 and elsewhere, where she would just take a song and eat it alive. And in this case, of course, Aretha Franklin is having a good time reclaiming a song that really isn't a song from the South. And that's part of what makes this whole back and forth between these Black and Jewish artists so interesting. What's the chicken? What's the egg in all of this? And, well, this one is so hot that I'm just going to let you hear it first. I will tell you, it's from 1963, and it's Miss Lena Horne.
If those historic gentlemen came back today, Jefferson, Washington, and Lincoln, and Walter Cronkite put them on Channel 2 to find out what they were thinking, I'm sure they'd say, thanks for quoting us so much, but we don't want to take a bow. Enough with the quoting, put those words into action, and we mean action now.
Since they say we all got
one could do entire programs, and we will in time, on Lena Horne, the remarkable American entertainer in so many fields and social civil rights activist as well, 1917 to 2010, New York born. Aretha Franklin grew up in Detroit, but was born in her early childhood was in Memphis. Returning to Josh Kuhn's comments here. When Lena Horne went to Israel in 1952, the young nation was in the midst of independence fever, and Horne was taken by what she called, quote, history in the making in a brand new country. She visited kibbutzes and a camp for Yemenite children, where she saw terribly oppressed people of color, people just emerging from the kind of bondage Negroes had been struggling so long to emerge from. Nearly a decade later, in the midst of U.S. civil rights upheavals, Horne decided it was the right time for her to leave RCA Victor and start singing more overtly political songs. In her words, how can I go on singing about a penthouse way up in the sky when, with housing restrictions the way they are now, I would not be allowed to rent that place? I can't get up in a nightclub in a $1,000 dress and start singing, Let My People Go. I never had the right. I didn't choose it to be that way, but it was the illusion that Hollywood gave me. In response to her call for more socially engaged material, Harold Arlen and Yip Harburg, you know them from The Wizard of Oz, and Brother Can You Spare a Dime, and political activism, though, as well, wrote her Silent Spring, based on Rachel Carson's influential book on pesticides and pollution, but which they extended into a civil rights commentary in light of the events of 1963. That same year, Adolph Green and Betty Comden and Julie Stein wrote Now, an incisive rant against civil rights abuses. I like that phrase, incisive rant, that Stein composed to the otherwise joyous tune of, yes, Hava Nagila, you heard it. Horne performed Now at a pair of benefit concerts at Carnegie Hall. She co-headlined with Sinatra. She sent her proceeds to the Gandhi Society for Human Rights, and then went into the studio with conductor Ray Ellis to cut it as a single. Variety wrote that she sang of new worlds to come. She wanted to share profits from the song with the NAACP and CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, but its radical lyrics kept it off the radio and Now never had the impact that Miss Horne had hoped for. She included it on the Here's Lena Now album for 20th Century Fox, alongside her takes on Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind and Arlen and Harburg's, again, Bloomer Girl, Call for Equality, The Eagle, and Me. Horne had sung that on Broadway in the 40s, Free as the Sun is Free, That's How It's Got to Be. Now did not entirely fade from view, though. It soon found the ears of Santiago Alvarez, an experimental Cuban filmmaker who used the song as the score for his own Now, a 1965 newsreel collage of black civil rights struggles considered a classic of Cuban cinema. So again, we have reversal upon reversal, only this time intentional from the beginning by the team of blacks and Jews. Last time we heard Cab Calloway having fun with Yiddish, many of us have enjoyed for many years some of the word games in many languages, including Yiddish, of Slim Gaylord. Here's the Slim Gaylord Quartet, and they'll tell you what the song is. I'll tell you it's from 1945.
Dunkin' Bagel, Dunkin' Bagel, Dunkin' Bagel, coffee.
About a bowl of gefilte fish.
Cold? Hot?
Dunkin' Bagel. Dunkin' Bagel. Maybe it could be a chain. Slim Gaylord Quartet, 1945. You know Slim Gaylord from Slim and Slam. Slam Stewart, bass player. A great wordsmith, a great character. One of my all-time favorites from their version of How High the Moon. Moon never say how low are you. If Cab Calloway, Josh Kuhn writes, was the king of Afro-Yiddish hybrids, then Slim Gaylord was the unpredictable court jester, a self-styled linguist and word magician who sang in a language he called voot, or vooterini, or sometimes floogie. Calloway published the Hepster's Dictionary. Gaylord published the Vooterini Dictionary. It's hard to pinpoint Voot's idiomatic sources, Spanish, Arabic, Jive, German, Japanese, but scraps of Yiddish seem to have been favorite Gaylord building blocks. The Yiddish shouts of a street vendor frame 3/6 cents. Mambo is turned Yiddish crazy on Meshuggah Mambo. Matzah balls and gefilte fish form the mantra of matzah balls. And there might be Yiddish in the loose scatting that flows through Gaylord and Stewart, Slim and Slam's version of By Mir Bis Du Shane, which we are told is their Hungarian version strictly from Hungary. We'll have to dig that up and play it sometime. Singer, guitarist, tap dancer, Gaylord was from Detroit, where legend has it that he ran bootleg booze for the local Jewish mob, the Purple Gang, before he headed into vaudeville. After success in New York as part of that Slim and Slam duo, look for them in the 1941 film Hell's a Poppin'. Look for everybody in Hell's a Poppin'. Oh my goodness, we're going to do a Hell's a Poppin' show. That is one of the great forgotten, rediscovered films of all time. Everyone's in it. Here they mention Martha Ray and Shemp Howard, but many, many more than that. It's something to see. Gaylord came west to Los Angeles, where he was a regular at Billy Berg's legendary mixed race Hollywood nightclub. He formed a quartet with Dodo Marmorosa, piano, Bam Brown, bass, and Zuddy Singleton, drummer. You had to have a good name to be in that group. Slim, Dodo, Bam, and Zuddy. And recorded a few sides for Eddie Lagunas' label, BB. Among them, Dunkin' Bagel. Well, we're going to go more serious with an artist who had a sense of humor, but who could also be very, very serious. And we're also going to go from American Jewish experience to Israel itself. Nina Simone, Eretz Zavat Chalav.
Okay, Joe, you got it. Thank you.
about her love with a bus. It's 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 about the hala. It's about the hala with a bus. It's about the hala. I love the bus, Eric's a botella. 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 It's a botella.
'63, Miss Nina Simone, Eretz Zavat Chalav, Bedevash, a land flowing with milk and honey. Nina Simone recorded her cover, Josh Kuhn writes, of this Israeli folk favorite, a hand-clapping ode to a land flowing with milk and honey, over a decade before embarking on her own first tour of Israel in the late 70s. On her El Al flight to Tel Aviv, Simone fell asleep, only to wake up to a line of excited Israelis standing in the plane's aisle, eager to meet her. When the plane landed, the High Priestess of Soul was greeted at the airport by the mayor of Tel Aviv. They said they had been waiting for me to come for 10 years, she later wrote. The newspapers were full of the news of my arrival. When Simone returned to the state, she claimed that her visit put her back in touch with herself and with God, and put her career back on track. Neither Simone nor her biographers talk much about her choice of this song. She sang it live at Carnegie Hall in 1963. Then a year later, on the folksy Nina album, she recorded it for Colpix. Some mystery has also shrouded the song's own history in Israel. Often mistaken for an ancient folk song, it's based on biblical verses, written, though, for a kibbutz celebration by Israeli folk composer and dancer Eliyahu Gamliel in the early 50s, a big hit in Israel for Yaffa Yarkoni in 1955. Nina Simone, of course, picked music from everywhere and turned it into something that then went back to everywhere. And here's another example of that. We're coming now to what I think is almost too odd to play. It's not that there's anything disturbing or offensive about it. I just don't get it, frankly. But there was a TV special back in 1969, and it was one of a series of these Motown-created specials. Diana Ross and the Supremes and the Temptations on Broadway. And the idea was that they took material, usually from long-running shows of the 60s, and they redid it in a Motown style, whether ballad or upbeat. And this is a medley by the Temptations from Fiddler on the Roof. It runs about 10 minutes. Let's give it a try.
Just what I am. Would it fall some passing Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match. Matchmaker, matchmaker, look through your book and make me a perfect match. Matchmaker, matchmaker, I'll bring the wine. I'll bring the bride, slender and fine. Up to this moment I misunderstood that I could be hung up for good. For mama, make her a lady. For mama, make her rich and renowned. For me, well, I wouldn't holler if she was the grooviest girl in town. Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match. Find me a find, catch me a catch. Night after night in the dark I'm alone.
Eddie Kendricks, Dennis Edwards, Paul Williams, Melvin Franklin, and Otis Williams.
Yes.
The Temptations. And the Temps indeed were singing versions of If I Were a Rich Man, Sunrise, Sunset, Matchmaker, Matchmaker, and then back to that kind of inside out If I Were a Rich Man songs, of course, of Sheldon Harnick and Jerry Bock. They're reimagined in Motown style for GIT on Broadway, known to most people as being the last appearance by Diana Ross as a member of the Supremes. But on this On Broadway album, it also fits into our funny blend here of Black and Jewish performance in the mid to late 20th century in these cases. I'm Andrew Patner. You're listening to Critical Thinking, our weekly program of conversation, music, and thinking out loud sometimes, as we're doing today with the music. We're going to wrap up our survey of Black Sabbath, this 2010 compilation from the Idelsohn Society, Idelsohn for Musical Preservation. In this case, their collection, Black Sabbath, that brings together works of Black and Jewish meeting, shall we say. Here's one that also is an extremely unusual pairing, but one that I think comes off certainly in its way. I'm not going to say anything about it. I'm just going to let you hear it, and then I'll say more about it. You heard it right, Kol Nidre, Johnny Mathis, 1958. Right around and just after, chances are, it's not for me to say, wonderful, wonderful, that golden voice from San Francisco that was and still is the voice of Johnny Mathis. By the time Johnny Mathis released his fourth album on Columbia, still in his 20s, 1958's Good Night, Dear Lord, he was already an established and beloved voice in easy-listening American pop. Actually, I think that's a bit unfair rewrite of history. He was an established voice, period, at that point. Later, we categorized it perhaps as easy-listening. The songs I mentioned had all gone gold. The next year, Misty was to do the same, all of which makes Good Night, Dear Lord, such a special listen, Josh Kuhn writes, a full album of lush, spiritual, and religious classics arranged by the Lord of Lush, Percy Faith, who was a Canadian Jewish band leader and arranger, of course, who then became a naturalized U.S. citizen, I think right here in Chicago, and reinterpreted here on the album by one of the most polished voices of the 20th century at the top of his game. Eli, Eli, where can I go? But Kuhn feels it's his rendition of the prayer that opens Yom Kippur, the Kol Nidre, that is the album's artistic zenith. That's Aramaic he was singing in. He takes the emotional weight. He wails the Day of Atonement blues. He has the cantorial style, as Samson Raphaelson said when he first witnessed Al Jolson on stage. This isn't a jazz singer, this is a cantor. In Mathis's version, you hear the entire history, Mr. Kuhn proposes, of blacks and Jews in America come rushing forth in the swell of his voice. The Old Testament stories reborn as black spirituals, the political content, and the desire to make it, to be oneself, to be true to one's people, but also to push boundaries and to connect. These are things, of course, that blacks and Jews and black and Jewish artists have always done, and here in this very interesting set of songs, Black Sabbath, you hear examples, some of them quite unusual. Well, let's go out with two songs from one of the great collaborations, on one of the great collaborations that grew out again of the views of both Southern whites and Northern Jews of the life of Southern coastal blacks. I'm speaking of DuBose Hayward and George and Ira Gershwin's Porgy and Bess. And in this case, I'm speaking of the 1957 Norman Granz produced Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong sing Porgy and Bess, two selections you know already.
Don't you cry. these mornings, you're gonna rise up singing. Yes, you spread your wings and you take to the sky. But till that morning, there's nothing can harm you. Yes, with daddy and mommy standing by. Bess, you is my woman now. You is, and you must laugh and sing and dance for two instead of one. On your brow, no how, because the sorrow of the past is all done. Oh, Bess, my Bess, the real happiness is just begun.
Summertime and wintertime.
time, and evening time, and summer time, and winter time. This you got your man.
Ella and Lewis making their own masterpieces out of the 1935 masterpiece Porgy and Bess. And there you have the 1957 recordings they made of Summertime and Bess, You Is My Woman Now. Thank you, Ella, Louie, all these wonderful artists, Steve Robinson, for bringing Black Sabbath to our attention, literally giving it to us. Matt DeStefano for helping me put this program together, making it sound great. Alpha Wood Foundation, our funder and other friends of this program. Rentap, R-E-N-T-A-P, at AOL.com, or this is your chance. Hit our new Facebook page, Critical Thinking with Andrew Patner on Facebook. And WFMT.com/Critical Thinking. You can hear this or any of our other programs again anytime, the Critical Thinking free podcast. I'm Andrew Patner. Are you hip to the jive? See you next week.